The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
The kids actually at one point gave me an ultimatum: break up with Mark or we'll never speak to you again. It has felt a lot like taking my power back and shifting from being very externally oriented to being internally centered. I mean, one of my biggest fears has been, you know, when I fully stand in my truth and I'm honest and things like that, people will abandon me. Well, That's exactly what has happened. So sometimes our fears really are actual, real, legitimate things we have to come to peace with before we take action. That fear is some part of us that wants to keep us safe, and the only way it knows how is to keep us small. But in order for us to grow, we have to say, thank you, I'm okay, I'm doing this anyway.
It's a wonderful chaos, beautifully random, messy and glorious,
solo or tandem.
We work to find rest and fight to find peace, both head and the heart.
Show
where the more that you learn is the less that you know, where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful
Hey Bam.
Hey Ann. So today, Andy, my kids divorced me.
Yes, we're gonna be with Lori Ann Rising, and we're gonna discuss quite an interesting topic, which normally doesn't happen in this direction. So the kids have divorced their parents as opposed to vice versa, which I think we heard a lot more of that. And we're going to do that on
A Wonderful Chaos.
Nice. Okay. So Bambos, we have to discuss what you just shared with me off air quickly.
So Andy has, as many of you know, the And It's Fucking Great Facebook
group.
Page.
That's group. A group.
Yeah. And pretty much yesterday I shared, being on dating apps is a fucking pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. Every time I see my thumb wanting to go to the app, I need love.
Ah.
And this morning I'm riding my bike. It was early in the morning. It was like, just finished the gym, 8 o'clock.
Okay.
And I look and I see what looked like a beautiful woman.
Oh, wow.
But it was on the opposite side of the street. My eyes are all watery. So I do a U-turn and I go to say hi to her.
Love it.
She turns around. She was a he who looked like a she. And I was like, I mistaked you for someone else.
So you didn't own it. You didn't own it.
No. And I was like, and it's fucking great.
Oh, that's nice. And was it somebody who was dressed as a female, or was it just because
they had a gym outfit on, and the way they were moving felt very feminine?
Okay.
And when they turned around, I was like, oh, wrong person.
I love it. I had a similar discussion this morning. I'm trying to furnish a house. So I called this person and the name is Dorian. And I thought Dorian was a male name.
No, it's a girl.
I just didn't know that. I just thought it. So when the person phoned me back, the voice was a female. And I wasn't sure. So I had to say, am I going to be honest and tell them? And so I was, of course. So I said, I'm either going to offend you or you'll at least think I'm genuine. But I thought you were going to be a male. And I still don't know for sure. But I'm assuming from your voice, you're a female. Then we had a bit of a laugh. So there was no...
I love it.
No danger. But yeah, it's nice to be authentic and know that sometimes people will take offense.
Yeah.
And even if it's not intended.
So I was not authentic and I still...
Your most authentic would have been to say, oh, I thought you were a female. I'm sorry.
You're still hot. But...
I would have loved that. Oh,
maybe I'll, if it ever happens again.
Yeah, you might say that.
I might say that.
Yeah, and then you probably have different issues.
Yeah.
So we have Lori Ann Rising on today.
It sounds like Laurie Ann Rising. Laurie Ann Rising. Laurie's Rising.
Yeah, and Laurie Ann, isn't it nice? Laurie Ann is Rising, and she has her own. She has her own podcast. That's how we met, because I was on her podcast, Rise and Shine. It was a really nice show. And based on that show, we said, hey, why don't we do a reciprocal
show? When was this show?
It's like 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe.
Okay.
And I thought it was really nice because when I talk to Laurie Ann, I'm always, you know, wanting a meaty, juicy story. So I was like, Laurie Ann, what's the topic? And she just said, well, my kids divorced me. And I was like, hold on, can we run with that? Because sometimes, I mean, I feel like there's a sense of discomfort with saying, can we talk about that story? Because there's got to be a massive amount of sensitivity for me. My assumption, of course, is that. So when I said, Laurie Ann, are you cool with going with that? And she's like, yeah, of course. Because that just, I always find it beautiful when people can kind of invite this level of what I feel to be a real level of intimacy, a real, you know, sharing part of their life that can't be all that easy. And as we know, we have enough people on the show. Usually it's reverse, right? Normally the parents have disowned the children.
Yeah.
How often is it that it's vice versa, that the kids, and in this case, let's keep in mind that these kids are like in their teenage years. They're not even adults.
How many kids are we talking about?
I believe two, but we'll talk to Laurie Ann about that. And for me, like, there's so many feelings that come up when I think about it, like, why would they do that? And then what, the immediate question was, well, what did Laurie do that caused this to happen? Right. Like the whole projection of blame.
Yeah.
Right. That whole thing. So what I love is that I get to like own that and then realize, oh, wow, life is complex and situations arise. And I'm sure when we hear it from Laurie, we'll have a good sense. And I think it's kind of beautiful because on some level, when we look at relationships, we often think that the adults are the ones that are like the incapable ones in a way, like incapable of raising their kids. But a lot of times there's a complexity which is really hard to understand if you're not in it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's really sweet to.
I really love this, Andy. And we're going to do that on.
Oh, you bastard! Did you know it earlier? Or did you just let me go like this for ages? So basically, the intro is supposed to be literally 20 seconds, and I thought we did it yet.
Andy,
so,
we did.
Did we?
I'm kidding.
You're really screwing with me right now. That's beautiful. And, oh, my. So I would have done the intro twice, by the way.
Andy would have just played this song.
I would have. I totally, because I don't know. You know, I need you to kind of manage my brain a bit.
I love it.
Oh. We could be in the middle of the show and, like, say, Andy, now let's do the intro.
So shall we bring Laurie on?
Yeah, we'll bring Laurie on. Hello, Laurie.
What? It's a very serious subject, so we're going to take the jokes out and get very serious with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We interviewed Andy. I know. It's all good. If you can't laugh along the way, what's the point, right?
Yeah, basically, would you have felt comfortable talking about the subject? Can I take any credit for the fact you feel comfortable having the subject with me?
And his wife would say, why do you always have to make it about you?
Exactly. She would. But can I take any credit for that? We're like, if any random person said, I want to talk to you about this on a podcast, would you have said the yes to just about anyone?
Yeah, actually, probably. Sorry.
Thanks, Laurie. You just took the cherry off the cup.
Oh, painful.
I mean, if you need me to make it about you for your ego's sake, I certainly can, because we loved having you on the show and that it really helped a lot, you know, to get a feel for things.
Laurie, so, if you want to have both of us on the show and talk about our relationship, we're more than happy to come on.
Codependency.
That would be, it would be interesting, you know, why not? We can check it out.
So when you heard, go ahead.
So Laurie, my first question would be, when Andy did ask you to talk about this, what goes on in you when you're, do you like, oh, what am I going to say? Are there parts of you which are not at peace? Still, I'm going quite in quite fast, I notice. But that's
why not jump in at the deep end? It took me years to even be able to tell more than about two or three people in my life. There were those that were there with me when it was happening, so to speak, and supported me through it. But to admit it publicly, even to people I knew, I couldn't for years. Mm-hmm. So having made peace with, I would say, the majority of it, I'm finding that it's something that when I share it, there's a way in which our stories, especially the difficult ones, tend to connect us as human beings. And so for me to share it, it continues to help me, but also I'm finding that it's helping others too. And if I can make something good out of what's happened, then I want to keep doing that. So I'm getting more and more comfortable sharing it and learning how to share it in ways that can bring up the good, not just, you know, dive into all of the hard, you know, not relive it, I guess. I would say I'm not 100% at peace with it. I mean, I miss my kids. You know, there are certain pieces that may never be completely settled. And that's life. So
you kind of, what you're saying is you kind of have to live with it and just find peace with even not being at peace with it.
Essentially, yes, very much so. It's, and just acknowledge, you know, like anybody who I think has gone through massive grief, whether it's usually losing a person they care about, there's always waves that come. It doesn't matter how long it's been. There's going to be something every once in a while. You just have a day or you have a moment or something where it just hits you. And you learn to just, that's part of life. That's just, you know, it's like putting on my socks in the morning. It's there and it's okay.
Like, I need to say that when I was coming today to do the show, I had to think about my own life because I am not allowed to see my daughter. And I tend to avoid talking about it. And I think we will do a show about it at some point. But the reason I don't feel comfortable talking about it, or even sometimes I'll catch myself wanting to change certain aspects of the story so I don't come across as a bad person or a bad father or whatever might be projected on me. And I'm wondering how that is for you when you're asked to talk about it.
There is definitely that, quite a bit. And, you know, I heard the introduction and Andy bringing up, you know, the automatic assumption that it's like, well, what did you do? And I'm aware of that. And there are pieces of me, like there are times, you know, in my personal life, I don't lead with that story. You know, and a lot of times I just don't talk about it. It depends on who it is. It depends on the relationship. It depends on all kinds of different things. It's almost easier to do it this way because I'm not subject necessarily to every single person's opinion who's watching it. It doesn't mean I don't hear some of it, but you know, that it's a different type of feel. You know, some conversations are just not good for the dinner table, so to speak.
So what did you do to screw up the relationship?
I kind of felt that question coming.
You warned me that maybe it was, you know, Bombos that would ask questions like that, not you. Man, come on, you're supposed to be my friend.
You're supposed to be the grown up.
Well, the funny thing is that I think through the question, you already can see clearly that the assumption is that there was a dynamic bigger than that. But that's that's the most inappropriate way to ask the question, which I often enjoy doing.
Well, and I love it because it is the one that's on everybody's minds. And like, you might as well just, you know, speak to the elephant in the living room.
Do you know what this is? This is drum roll.
We're working up to it, right? I mean, I'm human. I know I made mistakes. And from my perspective, I'm sure if you talk to my kids, they'd have an entirely different point of view. From my perspective, it had more to do with me choosing to change my behaviors to be a healthier person, in the sense of, you know, I had a lot of deep healing work to do. I knew that doing that deeper healing would change how I was living my life, the choices I was making. And I chose to go on that healing journey with the idea that I would be creating a better life for my kids and I. And that process took about 3 years or so, where it was really just a very deep dive. I want to say sort of when I was resurfacing, you know, because it felt like I really just kind of went into sort of a cave. I mean, I was living my life and all of that, but it was such an inner journey that it was a, you know, coming back, so to speak, and really realizing, okay, I really do need to make these adjustments and changes, and I'm ready for that now. It started changing relationships as well. And it was about that time I met Mark, my, you know, co-host and partner on the radio show, and we started dating. My kids' perception is that I met him and started changing who I was. They weren't aware of the healing journey I'd been on up to that point, because I'd kept it to myself. And at the time, the kids were 12 and 15. So of course, I mean, all of us at 12 and 15 are going through all kinds of things anyway. Mm. I had been very, very single for years up to that point. And so introducing this new person in my life with all of the other adjustments going on anyway, and my son was a 15-year-old, slightly older. So I'm aware that there's some of the, I want to say, jealousy pieces that would be natural for a boy of that age with a new man coming into the picture. My daughter struggled with that a bit as well. There's also the natural pulling away that teenagers do at those ages.
Yeah.
My son has Asperger's as well. So the understanding of social types of things are different. Mark was and is a very, very different type of man for me, which in my world is a good thing, because of the healing I did. I attracted somebody totally different, which my kids, I think, reacted differently to. And there's a number of different factors that went on. My ex is not a healthy individual, to say the least, in my opinion. It's been years. Hopefully he has changed and adjusted, and I don't know. I have had no communication with him. But at that point in time, just not a healthy individual, and had spent the years since our divorce telling the kids how manipulative and awful I was, and et cetera, et cetera. So the confusion I'm sure they were feeling, I had not been in a situation like that before. I was still trying to figure out, you know, who am I now that I've done this healing work? I know I'm reacting to things differently, responding to things differently. So it was kind of a perfect storm, I guess, in many ways. And what it came down to, the kids actually at one point gave me an ultimatum, which was either break up with Mark or we'll never speak to you again.
Wow.
And one, I probably didn't respond very well to that, because it triggered me in ways that I can't even express. But to me, that's a destructive ultimatum. I decided that I could not say yes to it. I mean, I just knew that it's like, well, if I chose my kids, then I have handed the power of my life choices over to a 12 and 15-year-old. And that's inappropriate. And if I do it this time, it just gives them that much more power next time, et cetera. That's not appropriate. I can't say yes to that. But if I choose Mark, we'd only been dating for 6 months. Like, who am I as a mother? I couldn't choose anyone over my kids.
By the way, I would love to break in, because there's like 10 things that you've said now that have sparked such reaction in me and such fascination. Awesome. I've often seen that in anyone's journey, they go through their own processes and the world around them has to integrate how they now interact with this different person. So when you said that your 12 and 15-year-old now had a new Lorianne rising mommy. Now they're interacting with her and they don't recognize the old patterns that they needed to feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And what I find fascinating is that in anyone's, call it self-awareness journey, spiritual, I don't care what the words are. If anyone goes through a journey where they change, what I know is that everyone around them has to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And what's fascinating is, as you've expressed it, I've never thought about it. This is the first time that if you're a person that has children and you evolve, your children have to adapt to your spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
How fascinating is that?
Well, I would say some people try to keep you.
Well, of course they do, which is what Lorianne's kids have tried to do.
It's a natural response for the rest of the world to try to sort of keep us back in our patterns just because they're unfamiliar with it. And it serves them to try to keep us in our old patterns because, one, it's familiar, and two, a lot of times we're saying no when we used to say yes, and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, my kids were put in a position of needing to adjust at a time when, you know, teenagers are pulling away and rebelling anyway. I often have wondered if maybe the dynamics, you know, I've witnessed other situations where, okay, well, other family members were supportive and understanding, so they were able to work through it. Yeah. In my case, my ex was quite the opposite. And it often feels to me, I don't know if it's true or not, there's a part of me that feels like, you know, it was taken advantage of and the kids were pulled away. Even the kid's attorney let me know at one point that there was a lot of manipulation that happened. And so, like you said, it was kind of a perfect storm of things going on. I have at times thought, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done the healing work. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I needed to heal. So I can't take it back either. You know, like I know I needed to do that. Maybe I should have done it sooner.
I just want to cherish you for a moment. Because as you shared the story with me, I thought, how much courage do you have to go through this at a time where there's so much uncertainty how things will evolve because of the kids and your ex?
Well, I guess I'm a rare duck in the sense that I'm used to living in uncertainty in many ways. Mm-hmm. The marriage that I had was difficult at best. He couldn't keep a job, and it was usually on me to try to make ends meet while trying to take care of the kids. And, you know, so there was always uncertainty. And so I just learned, it's like, well, if I need to do what I need to do, I just need to get it done. And that was something that, you know, uncertain or not, I did it with the intention of creating a better life for my kids, to show them what it means to be and become a healthier person.
Mm.
I believed that by doing the inner work and making myself a healthier person, I would lift my kids up and out of the chaos that was going on in all of our lives from the unhealthy patterns that I had participated in up to that point. And looking back, I guess the piece I didn't take into consideration was that the possibility my kids might choose the familiar over the healthy.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's been a difficult pill to swallow, I think.
That's fascinating.
I'm actually curious, Lori, who were you before you started the journey? So what would you say were the things you had to say?
The qualities.
Yeah, the qualities, the patterns.
Hmm.
Oh, well,
Who is the person you judged before? Tell me what you judged in that other Laurie and Rising.
The Laurie and not Rising?
Yeah, not Rising.
You know, I did choose my last name for a reason. We can get to that later. But no, I grew up in a household that there was abuse and very misogynistic stepfather, and grew up in a situation where it was really my responsibility to make sure everyone else was always happy, because for some reason it kind of felt like if I didn't, I was in danger type of scenario. And I recall being told as a teenager that I better make the boys happy because I'll be lucky to get married. And I should take the first one that comes along because they're not going to want me anyway. And you're not going to be anything if you're not married. Mm. I mean, like, that's literally what I was told. And so my self-esteem after growing up in that type of environment just pretty much didn't exist, I would say.
And you didn't think to divorce them.
My parents?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't divorce your parents, though.
Well, not at that age. I did my stepfather, I think it was my senior year of high school. Haven't seen or spoken to him since. My mom, she had a brain aneurysm, and I'm actually taking care of her. So okay. There's that. So I did separate myself in many ways as much as I could, but I, being 19, I wasn't fully aware of what all that meant to have grown up in that situation. There was so much of it. It was like, oh, it's just normal life. You know, that's what I grew up in. That's how life is. So walking into getting married, I mean, I can look back now and see that I inadvertently recreated my childhood.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
But it was all unconscious. It was all, you know, just following the default patterns. So I would say that I was a very broken individual, from all of that. My mom's aneurysm, I was 27 when that happened to her. She was only 49. But that was a situation that it was really the first time I would say that I woke up and started coming back to myself and realizing I needed to make some changes and started doing some of the work. I didn't divorce until later. And those last couple of years of being married were probably the worst and most abusive. So when I became a single mom, that was when I decided, okay, I need to really deep dive. There's patterns in my life I need to break. I was actually diagnosed with PTSD, which, if you know anything about that, you're not in control sometimes of the choices you're making because it's all triggers and it's a reactive, it's not a response. And so I had a lot of that type of healing to do so that I could regain control of my life and make healthy choices. So that was the healing work that I was doing after my divorce, was working on me.
And what would you say was the two or three patterns that after having broke them, you kind of could establish a new way of living?
For me, one of the key patterns, which is interesting. And I think it's hard to admit to two men, actually, but I am assuming there's a lot of women that will probably understand this idea of needing a man and being afraid to be alone. And, you know, especially having been told, look, you're nothing without a man, so you better get married kind of, you know, message. The ability to be alone and begin to trust myself to take care of me so that I could choose whether or not to have a partner in my life, as opposed to just, well, I'm desperate, I need somebody, so I'll take the next thing that comes along. That has been a huge one. And the ability to have my boundaries, even when it ticks other people off. That has been something, you know, the peacekeeper in me, that part of me that's like, oh, if I upset anybody, if they're upset, I'm in danger, has, you know, that has shifted. Like, okay, here's where I stand on this, take it or leave it, is a massive shift for me. So those types of things, it has felt a lot like taking my power back and shifting from being very externally oriented to being internally centered. I mean, that shifts everything, I would say. So
That's beautiful. Those two feel like core elements to actually finding freedom. If you say, I can be free independent of the recognition or the need to be together with somebody else, like as a core tenet of a life, and that, and I'm okay saying no, which is almost connected to that in some ways. Mm-hmm. And whatever you feel as a result of that is not my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. I think a lot of it too has been, you know, this process of speaking my truth, breaking the silence around, you know, because part of taking care of other people has been either trying to keep the peace at all costs or keeping my mouth shut when something isn't okay. It's been interesting because there's been a couple of times over the last year in particular where I have shared my truth, especially around this story. And as a result, I have had family members ask me to stop doing so, that it's my responsibility to, you know, somehow make things okay for the kids. And it's like, well, if they wanted it to be okay, then they should have treated me better. Like, this is not, you know, and I would say that pretty much of anyone. Like, I know there are mistakes made, but there was no responsibility taken. And to me, that's not okay. I'm willing to forgive. I'm willing to work through things. But I've heard the stories they've been telling other people about me, and I know they're not accurate. I actually have documentation of the things that I say about them. And I am still careful. I keep it to the facts. But yeah, I've got it all documented. So I'm not saying anything that I can't actually back up and prove. I'm not out just, you know, bad mouthing other people just for the sake of whatever. I mean, I remember in particular the text that I received was, you know, oh, well, words are sacred. So you need to, it was about a blog post. It's like, you know, you need to take that down. And my response was, yes, words are sacred. And so is my truth. And it will stay up. And yeah.
So what's interesting is that what I'm hearing, and this is fascinating. This is, I mean, we, Bambos and I have had this discussion as well, because sometimes when you've been discussing things on the show, you've also been saying, Andy, it isn't necessarily comfortable for everyone in my family when you'll share openly some of your past.
Yeah.
And, you know, both of my parents are dead and my brothers sort of know how crazy I am. So I'm lucky enough that they kind of accept we're not going to control them. Andy is him. But the thing that, as you're talking, when you make peace with the things that you're making peace with, part of that process is sharing so that others can heal through your journey. And as your journey doesn't align with the narrative of the people that need to vilify you, because they need to vilify you in order to hold their truth, then they can't allow you to write what you write, even if it is whatever we'd say your truth.
Well, I can imagine that if is it family that's judging you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So in my scenario, whatever I put out in the world also gets, they assume that it gets projected onto them. So if I'm a drug addict, then it says something about them. Or if I'm tried to commit suicide 5 times, it says something about them. So I can imagine it's not about you. It's about how they don't feel comfortable being associated to you.
Well, and I, that may be part of it. I honestly don't know.
I made a statement just now, and I hold it lightly, by the way.
It's totally okay. Because there is that piece. I mean, we assume, I think, in families that, you know, like, oh, well, your son is a basket case, or, you know, for example, or in and out of jail. What, you know, that must reflect on you as a parent somehow. Yeah. You know, those types of things. It's incredibly common in families. So I definitely hear that. And there is a piece of me, you know, like you asked at the beginning, it's like, well, the kids are mad at you, so what did you do? You know, type of, there is that reflection back and forth. I don't, in this particular case, know if that's, why they are trying to silence me. I know that I have been very quiet for many years because I was trying to protect my in-laws. I was trying to protect the kids. I was trying to protect essentially my ex by not sharing the truth about what he was doing because I knew it would hurt them and I didn't want to hurt them. You know, I didn't want to hurt others. So there's this thing, and I want to kind of, especially for women, there's this unconscious dynamic. It happens a lot in rape cases in particular, or abuse cases or things, where it's like you keep your silence to try to protect everybody. And then later when you do start speaking up, it's like, well, why didn't you say anything sooner if it's really the truth?
Yeah.
And now that you are speaking up, you're the one who's suspect somehow, because if it was really true, you would have spoken up sooner, or, you know, all of these types of things. It's like, well, there's a lot of reasons. Safety, for one thing, not speaking up sooner, self-esteem, guilt, shame, all kinds of things that we put on ourselves and society puts on us. Our society shames women, especially when we're victims of abuse of some kind or another. It's like, well, but you were with him. What's wrong with you? You know, it's like, well, but I didn't have control over his actions. Why are we not making him the responsible party here? But somehow it comes back to, well, but you stayed with him. What's wrong with you? You know? So a lot of those dynamics come up. So breaking those silences, it's interesting to get those responses when people want you to stay silent, because now they're forced to deal with something that's painful for them to try to integrate as a truth they weren't aware of before, because now they have to look at him as a different person, capable of things they didn't realize he was capable of. I'm not going to change the truth. I get that that's difficult for them, but that's on them to try to integrate at this stage, not on me to keep my silence to make them comfortable.
I love this topic, by the way, because what you're saying is something that I see inhibits just about anybody in their lives the moment that they try to overcome some trauma in the past. Like, if I talk about it, by talking about it, I also feel the fear of what might come back at me for it. So there's a fear that I even see in myself when I write my books, right? Every time I write a book and I know other people will have a different interpretation of those events, and I don't hold my truth. I don't hold truth per se, but I do have an experience which I can share. There's a vulnerability in doing that. And I see that it's really hard for people to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you bring up fear. There's been a acronym that goes around, you know, fear is false evidence appearing real. And in my life, I mean, one of my biggest fears has been, you know, when I fully stand in my truth and I'm honest and things like that, people will abandon me. And well, that's exactly what has happened. So it's not false evidence. It's happened over and over again. And so sometimes our fears really are actual, real, legitimate things we have to come to peace with before we take action, that that is a real possibility. And is it worth doing anyway? So I've adjusted the acronym for myself to work through that. So instead of false evidence appearing real, I consider it a friendly energy awaiting recognition. Because really, that fear is some part of us that wants to keep us safe. And the only way it knows how is to keep us small. And so really, it's a part of us that is really wanting to love us and take care of us. But in order for us to grow, we have to say, thank you, I'm okay, I'm doing this anyway.
Yeah. And I think there's something beautiful about that journey, and it's so fucking hard.
Yes. Understatement.
How much self-love do you have to have to accept that there's pain, that you don't even, you can't even anticipate. You just can feel that potential and still take the journey.
It's almost a chicken and egg thing. I would say that I had to get to a point where I was so sick and tired of what was that it was more painful to stay than it was to start moving.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's as much about self-love as it is about just getting sick and tired of being sick and tired. And those first few steps got me to the next one and the next one. And I learned the self-love on the journey itself so that I could keep taking those steps. So it's, we don't have to wait to love ourselves perfectly to start being better.
Actually, I would correct what I said earlier and having heard your response, because it fits into everything that I've actually usually say, which is just, have you felt enough pain so that you're going to make a change? And half of my job as a coach is to make people's lives more miserable so that they fundamentally decide to make the change. Because if you try to convince them of anything, it's never sustainable. It's almost like if it doesn't come from their own dedication to changing it, it's never going to work anyways.
Creating contrast.
Yep, creating contrast.
Yeah, he's done that.
I know from my own coaching experience, there's two sides to that. It's like we can create the pain and acknowledge that. And then we also have to create a big enough vision that pulls us forward, because there's going to be obstacles. There's going to be things along the way. And I mean, every step of the way, there's another piece of doubt. Like, is this really the choice I'm making and the choice I'm going to stand by? Or do I need to turn back and try to make things right? And you know, there is a level of, I'm grateful to have gone through it now. And some parts of me kind of, you know, I still go back and go, well, what could I have done differently? And when could I have done it differently? And there's a part of me that at some point in that cycle, that inner torture I put myself through, there's always this piece of me that goes, yeah, and I would have had to have been a different person than I was back then also. Obviously. And I wasn't there yet. It took all of that to get me to the point. And so I think a lot of it is also a matter of self-forgiveness. And that happens more than once around the same stuff.
You know what I love about you and your story is that, and it feels so, Bumbo said yesterday he wanted to do a story or a show on surrender. That's a big theme that comes up all the time when we're working together. And what I find really gorgeous in how I'm hearing your story is you chose to make yourself healthy and trusted that whatever that led to, it would be fine to some degree because you didn't have a choice anyways.
Well, there's always a choice. I was just so tired of the same old patterns that I needed something different. So I put myself through, I mean, it was 3 years of nightmares and, you know, all kinds of stuff to work through the PTSD. I mean, it was, that in itself was not an easy journey, you know, and I was a single mother. I was working full time. I was working on my master's degree at the same time. I had to take my ex back to court a couple of times during that same period, all while working through the PTSD and triggers and all of that. So it was a very difficult time. I almost didn't complete my master's degree, actually, because of some of it. But I'm so grateful that my advisors were incredibly supportive. And there's no way I could have done it without them. It was worth it to me because I had a bigger vision. I had an idea that if I can just do this work, life is going to get healthier. And at the very least, I can show my kids by example of what it means to, yes, make mistakes, but learn from them, become a better person, and pursue being the best that I can be in my life. I mean, that was really, even becoming a mother, that was what I wanted to show my kids, is what's the possibility of life, not all of the junk and the survival and, you know, everything that I was actually living at the time. But, you know, I wanted my kids to feel comfortable being individuals in the world rather than trying to fit in. I wanted my kids to know that their uniqueness is beautiful and special and wonderful. And even if somebody doesn't understand that, to hold on to it. And I wanted to model for my kids what it means to pursue your dreams in spite of whatever difficulties. But I needed to be the person that could do those things so that I could model it. It wasn't enough to just tell them.
I'm not communicating well enough to you right now.
Uh-oh. What did I miss?
You didn't miss anything. I'm wanting to share my admiration for your journey.
Hmm.
And the risks that every time I try to, I hear that you don't necessarily see it that way, because, but there's something that you've done at a time in your life when it wasn't easy and there were repercussions which are out of your control. And that for me is to be celebrated. And now that I hear your story, I sit in deep admiration of what you've done.
Mm.
And I just wanted to share it in a way that wasn't as a question. It's just that.
Wow. I might have to grab a Kleenex, but thank you.
I was going to say maybe it's a good moment to have at least 10 seconds of a few deep breaths.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you. Yeah, I admit sometimes it's difficult to just stop and let some of that in, maybe because I'm so used to fighting. And that's something to... So thank you for pausing. I appreciate that.
Mm.
Have you read Andy's book, The Last Letter?
I have it. I have not had the opportunity to read it yet.
that was the longest I have it. Well, you can imagine it's about writing a letter to a loved one while they're still alive, for example, as if it would be the last thing that you would share with them. And I'm wondering, what would be, if you would write such a letter to your kids, what would be the thing that you would want to share with them?
Mm.
Or if this YouTube podcast that we're doing would be the thing that they would watch, what would be the thing that you would want to communicate with them?
Mm.
You know, honestly, I think about that all the time. So I appreciate you asking. It's actually the first time I've had the opportunity to express it. What I would want to communicate with them is that I've never stopped loving them, that I still do. I always will. And whatever mistakes, whatever challenges, whatever, all of this stuff that has happened. I mean, it's at this stage, it's been 5 years now. I know that we're all different people, you know. It's weird to think that I'm not sure that I would even recognize my own kids walking down the street right now. Mm. But mostly just that I love them. I miss them. There are still constantly days when I know I'm creating the life that I absolutely love, and I wish like hell I could share it with them. It's like, this is the life that I wanted to share with you. This is the life that I did all of that for. And I hope someday we have the opportunity to make peace. I don't know. I wish we could have a relationship again. I also am aware that with a lot of time passing, that may or may not be possible. But if we could at least make peace and talk through things, I know there were things that weren't talked about. But yeah, I still love them. And I think anything is forgivable if we're willing to do the work together to do that. So.
I'm not sure what the right question would be. And thank you for sharing that, by the way. Oh, it even feels like it's stuck in my throat. So when two people are having a discussion and they're holding on to their truths, to what degree do we, like it always takes one person in my brain to just say, you're right and I love you. And I'm wondering how would you see that playing out for yourself to just, even though there's a truth that you abide and you have all the documents, like to what degree are you willing to also let that go in order to stay connected to them? And I'm not sure if this question is even appropriate, but I'm just putting it out there.
You're worried about appropriate questions now? Wow.
I didn't think that was an appropriate question, by the way, but I can tell
you talk about question. It.
Andy,
I love it.
Just because you said that, fuck off.
I love it.
Do you know why I say that?
No, don't go. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Oh.
Because if she accepts it, let it go.
Do you accept it?
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good. I hear where you're coming from, and I get that there's always different sides to things. And I am willing to accept that, okay, they saw it one way, I saw it differently, and maybe we'll never convince each other of certain pieces, and that's okay if we can hear each other and move forward with a different kind of understanding. With my son in particular, though, there's a level at which I feel strongly that there's responsibility he needs to take. He flat out lied and manipulated, and in doing so caused incredible damage. And that's something I can forgive if responsibility is taken and the truth is finally told, because those lies and that manipulation is why my daughter's not in my life. Mm-hmm. It's why everything he knows he is the core reason for these things. And I'm aware that it happened out of anger, out of fear, out of being 15 and screwed up, because, you know, that's what teenage years are. And so I have a level of understanding in that regard, but he needs to take responsibility and tell the truth for things to be resolved. Because without that, without, in my mind, for me personally, the one thing that I always told the kids, don't lie, because the truth will always surface. Always. It may take time, but it will surface, and you're going to have to deal with it. And if there's anything I cannot and will not handle, it's a lie. If you mess up, tell me, and I will stand by you and we'll work it out. But you lie to me and you're on your own. I can't do it. The core of this is that he lied. And
you would say the lie was also done, if I understand correctly, with intention to hurt.
Yes.
So basically you're saying, if I summarize, is that since the intention to hurt was so clear, it wasn't just a misperception of events. It was a creation to hurt you.
It absolutely was. And that's not just me saying it, actually. Like I said, I do have documentation, but I did, there was one point. So this all, the reason I say that the kids divorced me is because it did actually go through the courts. I lost my parenting rights. They took me to court and cut me out of their life.
So your kids did that, or your husband, ex-husband did that?
So he filled out the initial paperwork on their behalf.
Okay.
But the courts appointed my kids their own attorney. My ex did not have one.
Okay.
So the kids had their own attorney. And so, I mean, that it's ironic that I pay child support and have no parenting rights.
Mm.
So it went through the courts, and there was a state, there was towards the end, it was about a year long process. And towards the end of it, it was my attorney, me, and the kid's attorney sitting and talking about, okay, this is coming to a conclusion. What kind of conclusion can we create, essentially? Mm. And the kid's attorney told me that, you know, and he'd handled thousands of cases, you know, and seen all kinds of things. And so he said, look, you know, we don't diagnose at 15, you know, because it can be hormones, it can be all kinds of things. Mm. He said, but I have witnessed your son taking glee in the pain he's causing, and he knows he's causing it. He knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He said he's displaying sociopathic tendencies. Mm-hmm. And now it is something that quite likely he'll grow out of. It's a teenage thing, or there's anger, or there's something, but he is aware of what he's doing.
Wow.
And your daughter is being manipulated by both your son and your ex-husband.
Wow.
And she's not aware of it. Mm-hmm. And all I could do is sit there and say, yeah, I know, because I had the documentation.
But like, so slow, I'd like to move out of this discussion for one reason.
Sure.
Is that us even sitting with telling the story creates more of it in your life. And to some degree, there is no, you're in the helplessness. Basically, I want to rewrite the story right now.
Okay.
You created a healthy environment for you and your surrounding. What you couldn't control was how others would react to that. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, the foundation that was created prior to that with your ex and given the predisposition of both of your children, you had no control over that. But all you did have control over was taking control over your own life.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And what I see in my own life is that when anyone does that, I just sit in admiration of it. And the rougher the conditions are, the more admiration I sit in, because I know how hard it is to make my house clean. I can't clean anyone else's, but I can clean my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I hear is you made your house clean. You had no capacity to decide how that would impact the other world. That's outside of your control. I wouldn't even want to tell a story about it. Just like, hey, apparently this is how it evolved because others weren't incapable of whatever evolving, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, anything more than that feels like it's playing an old record, which isn't celebrating what it really is, which is you moving past all of that bullshit and the repercussions of it, which you didn't have control over anyways.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Would you like me to kiss him for you?
I don't know.
Why he's like,
no. Why did you say that?
Because I loved what you just did.
Yeah, I hate stories which aren't celebrating what the person has achieved and accomplished as if that other story is even relevant. It isn't relevant.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because you were asking, you know, could it, you know, could we just let it go for the sake of forgiveness? And it's like, well, yes. And there's a level of
that was the story that I didn't like in the question Bambos asked you, by the way. I would have rephrased the question differently. I'll tell him off air what I would have asked, how I would have rephrased it differently. Or we can discuss.
Well, now I'm curious. How would you have rephrased it?
I would say, what if anything do you think you haven't yet done so that you could make peace with the situation with your kids?
See, that's entirely like I can make peace with it within myself without having, you know, without. So it's an entirely different question, I think, which is.
And there's a reason why. Gotcha. There's a reason why I would have asked the question that way and not the other way is that, and this is, again, my interpretation, but the way Bambos phrased the question to you puts the burden on you to solve something that may not be your burden to solve, as if you had any control over your kids. Mine is assuming that you basically have agency over your own life and you don't have agency over their lives. So I like that he asked the question, but there was a judgment in it that I heard that wasn't expressed that you also heard, and you allowed it in, which I thought was sweet. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I love that both questions are asked, because it does shift it. And our society isn't used to, I think, having that different, like, you know, there is this expectation. And I've had family members say, well, you're the mom. It's your responsibility to make this right. You're the one who's supposed to go to your kids and make this okay. Yeah. And it's like, well, but I can't. It's not mine to make okay. I have me to take care of, and they have some growing up to do. So I will be here when they're ready.
Yeah.
But that is something that culturally we do to each other, especially to parents. And I think especially to moms when it comes to kids. Like, well, but you're the mom. You're supposed to be the nurturing one. You're supposed to, it's like, well, and my kids have minds of their own.
Yeah, you're supposed to self-sacrifice to the point that you lose anything it would mean for you to live a fulfilling life. That's your role.
Or even to self-sacrifice to the point of having zero boundaries and zero agency, which I did actually attempt to live that way at one point. And I think maybe that's part of where the kids' response to my adjustment happened, because now, you know, I was taking my agency back, even from them, because I had in some ways lived that way and I wasn't doing it anymore. And so there was that underlying reaction. But yeah, that is especially put on mothers that we don't, I mean, I'm sure fathers have their own experiences, but it's a slightly different experience.
And which goes back to the beginning of the show when I said, I thought it was so beautiful that you came on to discuss it, because I heard the judgment towards a mother who wasn't able to make it work with their kids. And I thought, how beautiful is it that you're able and willing to share, knowing that that could be projected onto you?
Oh, knowing that it is. I've had
it. Is. Of course it is.
It to me. It's not even possible. It's like, it is constantly. Yeah. And I'm just kind of learning to, like, let people have their opinions. I can't change that. They can choose to believe me or not. I know who I am. I mean, a big way that I think the number one thing that got me through that year was that every time I passed by a mirror, I would stop and look myself in the eye and ask, who do I choose to be?
Wow.
And what does that mean? And how do I even make that choice?
Yep.
Because like I said, with the ultimatum in place that my kids would not back down from, I'm like, I can't choose either one of those things. I have to choose a third path. And I know I am probably going to wind up alone.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Who am I? And so I spent a full year doing that every time I passed by a mirror. And anytime I've ever been in a situation like that, my thoughts have always gone back to, you know, as long as I know who I am and why I made the choices I have, nothing else matters. I can live with myself.
Yeah. It was interesting because your story reminds me of when I was in my early 20s. I came back to the U.S. after being away. And my dad said, if you go back to Europe, I'm disowning you. You're dead. You're written out of my will. Like, so you have, this is the ultimatum. Like, that was just, it was like, and I remember looking at myself in the mirror and saying, wow, this is that moment in life. If you accept your dad, can you ever respect who you are the rest of your life? Like, it was almost, he pushed me away without even knowing it. Because I could never have respected who I was if I had stayed.
Yeah. Well, and ultimatums like that, in my opinion, they're relationship destroyers, because it's a power struggle. at that stage.
True.
It's all about who gets to decide the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And that's my choice, not yours, you know? So.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we've gone over our hour.
Oh. So,
what's like that?
It seems like it went fairly quickly.
But it was really incredible to be with you. I was nervous before you came on, as I mentioned, because I read the title of the show and I thought, oh, Jesus, this is intense. And having you share has just been a beautiful experience to hear your journey with something that's totally not really, I can imagine, comfortable to share.
Yeah, it's getting there as I make peace with it. You know, I can't change the past. It has made me who I am, and I love myself more and more every day. So it is what it is.
Well, just leave thinking you have two people in admiration for how you've chosen to live, knowing that there are implications that aren't necessarily in your control.
So, well, thank you.
And I do need to say that I've been judging myself for my relationship with my own daughter. Mm. And this show I'm going to have to rewatch, because in a way I could resonate with quite a few points. Also, Ultimatum's power games that were played. And I've never really talked about it because I felt ashamed for the choice that I made. Mm. Mm. But actually, I didn't really have a choice when I look back. And so pretty much this show has given a kind of opportunity to rewrite my story.
Mm.
So thank
Beautiful.
You. Yeah.
Well, I can certainly understand and empathize with that. Like I said, it took me, you know, once everything was complete in the courts, it still took me about 3 or 4 years to even right. admit without tears, you know, that any of it had even happened. Right. So it's a process. It is definitely a process.
Mm. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you both. I appreciate it.
Wow.
Before we go off, I was going to ask you anyway when we go off air, so we might as well do it now.
Yeah.
Because it's a learning,
mm-hmm.
and it's nice to share.
Yeah.
What was the judgment that you saw?
What I perceived, right?
Yeah.
The perception was when you ask a question, you may have a belief, which in that belief is shown through a question. So in the question to Lorianne, the potential, right, because I'm projecting and I have to process how I reacted, was that there was something that she could be doing that she wasn't doing.
Yeah.
So the assumption being, Lorianne, you could be doing something that you're not already doing. And if you already did that, then you maybe make peace with the situation or make peace with them. So it didn't take helplessness into account, that she isn't in control of the outcome. So by asking it more open, like you saw me reframe it, what gives her the opportunity is to reflect on it, but also acknowledge that she doesn't control her kids and that if someone's making up stories, she can't change that.
Yeah.
So the danger in a question which implies that she's not doing enough, it could leave that other person feeling as if they're not doing enough in the situation, and then they feel reinforcing that belief that they're not doing the thing and all that. So in my life, I'm always trying to ask questions which take into account the fact that there is helplessness, which is why I said, what if anything else could you do? She might say, I can do nothing else. Or she might say, well, I could do this, this, or that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the nuance, which I'm always very sensitive to, because if I hear the slightest judgment in a question from somebody else, it tells me more about them than it does about me.
I think we're going to have to talk about it more, because I know it's coming from my own personal experience.
That's what I took away from it. Yeah. I heard in your statement, by the way, if I may, that it came from your experience with your kids.
Yeah.
So you were reacting to what you felt like you could do differently in your relationship, and then it bled into the question. That's my assumption.
But it doesn't fully resonate, okay. but it's sure something that I can.
Yeah. Well, it'll be great to you know, or listen, watch the show afterwards, and you'll hear the nuance between the question I asked and the one you asked to see how it feels different. And nor is better, actually, the fact that Lorianne embraced your question made your question great. And if she didn't embrace it, then it was like, okay, that's a nuance, which asked differently might not trigger a reaction. That's just, that's it, right?
It's a wonderful chaos.
We like it that way.